バシュデバヤ。オンナモバガヴァテヴァシュデヴァイア。Readings from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 18, Prithu Maharaj milks the earth planet, text 15. Kitavatsam Sudagana Indram Somam Aduduhan Hanmayena Patrena Viryam Ojo Balampaya Kitavatsam Sudagana Indram Somam Aduduhan Hiranmayena Patrena Viryam Ojo Balampaya Kitavatsam Sudagana Indran somam aduduhan Haranmayena patrena Viyam ojo balampaya Vaishnavis. Kritta, making. Vatsam, calf. Suragana, the demigods. Indram, Indra, king of heaven. Somam, nectar. Aduduhan, they milked out. Haranmayena, golden. Patrena, with a pot. Viryam, mental power. Oja, strength of the senses. Balam, strength of the body. Paya, milk. Translation. All the demigods made Indra, the king of heaven, into a calf. And from the earth, they milked the beverage soma, which is nectar. Thus they became very powerful in mental speculation and bodily and sensual strength. Purport. In this verse, the word soma means nectar. Soma is a kind of beverage made in the heavenly planets, from the moon to the kingdoms of the demigods in the various higher planetary systems. By drinking this soma beverage, the demigods become more powerful mentally and increase their sensual power and bodily strength. The words haranmayena patrena indicate that this soma beverage is not an ordinary intoxicating liquor. The demigods would not touch any kind of liquor. Nor is soma a kind of drug. It is a different kind of beverage available in the heavenly planets. Soma is far different from the liquors made for demoniac people, as explained in the next verse. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Achakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So what are you going to say about this account given in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam? To your understanding, it sounds fantastic, incredible, almost mythological, as people would ordinarily refer to such things. And then you have the purport where Srila Prabhupada is explaining about soma beverage. Now, what are you going to say? I don't believe that. Oh, it sounds too incredible. If we are humble, we admit there are so many things in this universe beyond the range of our senses. And our only hope for understanding these things is to hear from experienced persons. But it is the nature of material existence that you become proud. By associating with material nature, your heart becomes infected, and one of the infections is pride. Because you have to have this false pride in order to push on in material life. You're meeting defeat birth after birth. Still, you march on, trying to achieve your goal, which is to please your senses and be happy. So, just by understanding this point of your ability to march on in material existence, in spite of all inconveniences, impediments, botherations, disturbances, catastrophes, collapse, still you go on, that shows you have pride. Now, that false pride does not simply show up in terms of your foolish march forward. It also shows up in terms of your acquiring knowledge. Due to the influence of the modes of material nature, you are infatuated with the power of your limited senses, and you think that reality is more or less, for the most part, what you perceive. And you become very proud about that and insensitive to things that are beyond the range of your senses. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is not describing anything from the spiritual world, although it is true that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is saturated with Krishna praying, as Sanatana Goswami explains. Even when the Bhagavatam is talking about heavenly planets things, or earthly planets things, or even lower. Still, because it's the Bhagavatam, you are getting 100% the effect of associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and your dormant love of Krishna is becoming revived. This is actually a scientific process. Just because this process does not resemble the laboratory processes of materialist scientists, doesn't mean that we're not practicing a science. So many people today are down on religious belief that the whole world has become screwed up because people are just suspending their rational faculties, suspending their critical intelligence, and accepting things on faith. Just recently, in the state of California, the material scientists had a grand convention, their Gaur Purnima, perverted equivalent. And all the most powerful, prominent, celebrated atheistic scientists gathered. And their whole point of their two-day conference was, we have to do something to stop religion. We have to do something to smash religious faith. That was the point of their whole conference. Anyone can see how religious faith and belief has destroyed the world. Terrorism, fanaticism. We've got to do something about it now. The only disagreement was, shall we smash religion with a crowbar or a baseball bat? the moderates went for the baseball bat, and the radicals went for the crowbar. I cannot state it enough. These were the biggest names in the world, Nobel Prize winners, and they were angry. We're sick of religion. How can anyone believe in these things? Those were the more extreme ones. The moderates, what did they say? Look, we all know religion's not true. We all know there's no God. But there's no point in just making very agitating statements about it. Be sympathetic to people who require religious belief. There's always going to be a certain number of people in this world who, even if you present them with the facts, they're going to cling to their beliefs. That's just the way it is. So we have to be gentle about dealing with this fantasy. We have to be understanding and compassionate about dealing with this religious delusion. So one very celebrated scientist in charge of the Hayden Planetarium in New York City, he said, look, you guys who are just cutting up the religious people so violently with your words, you scientists are doing that, you're not helping. Just look what I do. Watch my show. Watch this. And he put on what is described as a brilliant graphic PowerPoint presentation of children who are born with the most outlandish, unfortunate birth defects. And it was spellbinding, supposedly. And then, what was the conclusion of his presentation? Now you can see, anyone will admit, there's no God in control. There's just blind nature. I have established the point. You've seen the birth defects. You've seen how grotesque they are. The conclusion is obvious. There's no God. This is a far superior way to reach out to people, to preach, than just to make agitating statements condemning religious people. The more radical ones, who have now best-selling books in the USA, as we described the last time, they were saying things like, religion is brainwashing, and to teach your children, religion is child abuse. These are the most brilliant scientists in the world. They're speaking like this. And then they wanted to fire themselves up, both the moderates and the more radical ones. They said, we've got to get that evangelical preaching spirit, just like the religious people. We've got to come together and develop a world opposite of a Sankirtan party. And we've got to go to every town and village and spread the Yuga Dharma. We've got to let people know. We should take a leaf from the religious people's book and become more outgoing, evangelical, and put religion into its grave. One lady scientist was saying, yeah, just like religious people raise their children from birth on religious stories, we should raise children from birth on scientific stories and tell our children without hesitation, this is the greatest story ever told. Everything comes from matter. Everything develops by chance. Forget the Christian stories. Forget the other stories of the other religions. We have indeed the greatest story ever told. We should not be ashamed of it. So then the moderates, they were urging, now let's be very respectful. People need to have their beliefs. We know it's foolishness, but you know, that's the human tendency. Let's not get too agitating. Then the radicals exploded. Wait a minute. By your failing to just smash religion directly, you're being uncompassionate to the people in general. If you treat religion, which we all know is a disease, if you treat it with some kind of gloves-on, soft attitude, the people will still cling to it. You're doing the people a disservice by, I respect you for your religious beliefs. Everyone's entitled to their belief. When you do that, you're allowing the people to go on in their delusions. Our point is superior. We want to save the people. We want to smash their religious beliefs to bits and that way rid the world of this horrid disease. So this is going on. Just like the devotees should be making plans how to spread Krishna consciousness, here you have the demons making plans how to escalate throughout the world. And these were not just ordinary guys. These were the top guns in the world. This is what's going on. They began to debate and plan how to get people to understand that knowledge derived by Scripture and revelation is completely inferior. It's not even inferior, it's ridiculous. They have this crazy belief that knowledge derived by faith and Shastra is superior. It's the highest way to learn. We've got to do something about that. So this is what's happening today. The agitation caused by these persons is increasing more and more. They're making plans how to spread this demoniac consciousness throughout the world. And they even admitted, they said, roughly speaking, we all agree that there has been a decline in attachment of the people for evolution and for the Big Bang Theory as the cause for creation. We admit things are slipping. Therefore, we've got to get it together. We've got to rally the troops and get out of the trenches, go over the top, and do something about it. But this is what's going on today. Now, here we are. We're hearing about Indra, the king of heaven. The demigods made him into a calf, and from the earth they milked the beverage soma, which is nectar. Prabhupada, in his previous purport, explains, you might take this figuratively. He didn't say this is allegory or figurative expression. He said, you might take it in that way, but even if you do, you can't escape the essential point. What is the essential point? That unless you treat the earth properly, you're going to starve. Now, what do we mean by treat the earth properly? What's the Bhagavatam standard for treating the earth properly? Does it mean to have, you know, Earth Day parades and buy disposable paper bags and no more plastic bags? Those things are just very tiny and actually inconsequential when compared to the Bhagavatam standard of how to deal with the earth. The Bhagavatam standard for how to deal with the earth is indeed to consider that just as a calf is used to get a cow to give milk, the cow sees the calf, and the cow feels affection for the calf, and therefore the cow delivers milk. Similarly, the earth needs to feel the affection for devotees. When there are devotees on the surface of the earth becomes inspired, just like a cow becomes inspired upon seeing its calf, and therefore the earth releases all its natural ingredients which are necessary for human progress. So this is the Bhagavatam standpoint. So Prabhupada is not saying this is just an allegory, this is a figurative expression, this thing about the calf and the demigods milking. No, he's just saying, you may take it in that way, but let that get into the way of the real point, which is you've got to change your way of civilization. You've got to change your way of life. Now, this is Srila Prabhupada arming us with all the preaching ammunition we need to march forward for at least the next 10,000 years. Notice how compassionate Srila Prabhupada is in the purport, where he's trying to get you to understand what is soma. So generally, the way you try to get people to understand things that are beyond their experiences, you use things that are within their experience. So therefore, Prabhupada talks about, well, it's not liquor, it's not drugs. This is what you guys are familiar with. So I'll try to bring you closer to the understanding by using things familiar to you. So, soma is a beverage in the heavenly planets that the demigods take, and we hear they become more powerful mentally and they increase their sensual power and bodily strength. You don't read anything about they become forgetful, they become wasted, they lose their mind. They can't remember what they did, you know, the night before. I'll never forget. I was doing some preaching at a university in England a couple of years ago, and I was talking to some students, and they were up-and-coming doctors and lawyers. They were, you know, in their minds, they were heading to the top of society. So I just asked them, you know, okay, what do you guys do on a Friday night? They just all looked at me like I was crazy. How can you ask that question? Man, what planet are you from? What do we do on a Friday night? Well, what do you expect? We get wasted. So I said, well, don't you feel the next morning miserable? Don't you feel, you know, hangover? Don't you feel that? Of course we do. But just those few hours of happiness on Friday night makes it all worthwhile. It looked at me like, this is the scientific fact. And then one girl, she was studying to be a doctor. She really got spontaneous and excited. And she said, you know what the greatest thing is? The greatest thing is when you wake up on Saturday morning and someone's next to you and you can't figure out how he got there. And everyone laughed. Yeah. And she said, and then come Monday, you could tell all your friends, guess what? I woke up Saturday morning and he was, I didn't know. And all the friends laughed. Oh. So this is the standard of so-called civilization today. We have nothing to do with this standard, and it is a problem. We are a problem for materialists. They're a problem for us. That's the way it's going to be. At some point in your Krishna conscious career, you've got to make peace with this point. You may gloss over it. You may overlook it. You may sweep it under the rug. But at some point, you're going to have to accept that there is a basic incompatibility. We are going one place. They're going another. So even the demigods, when they take their somaras, they don't become ignorant. They don't go into tamagun. Of course, Nala Kuvara and Manigriva had a bit of a problem. They actually were getting stoned. And they were doing something that is considered to be the pinnacle of happiness today. They were stoned and bathing in a river with young girls, and everyone was without clothes. That's considered like the supreme destination today. I mean, how could you knock that? As you know, they didn't see Narada Muni, who was coming by. The girls saw him. They put their clothes back on. But the boys were so out of it. They were intoxicated not only by liquor, but also by their wealth, because they were sons of Kuvera. And so their whole situation made them arrogant, and therefore Narada Muni cursed them. You'll become trees. But at the end of 100 years, the time of the demigods, you'll be liberated by Krishna. You'll see Krishna face to face. So they were not drinking somaras. They were intoxicated by liquor. They shouldn't have been doing that in the heavenly planets. That's what one reason why Narada Muni was angry. But his anger had such a sublime benediction attached to it. Therefore, during the month of Kartik, we sing Kuvaratma Jo Bhada Murchaiva Yadva Taya Mochita Bhakti Bhaja Kritaucha. Lord Damodar, just like you delivered those two sons of Kuvera, you please deliver me. That is the mood of that prayer. Just like you gave them Prema Bhakti. In other words, you didn't simply give them liberation from material existence. You gave them pure love of Krishna. Please also give that to me. So, although Nala Kuvara and Manigriva were so absorbed in ignorance intoxication, because they happened to come across Narada Muni, they got this benefit. Why? They were intoxicated. They were doing lewd things. But this is the power of association of devotees. Therefore, we send devotees everywhere to give people the chance to come in contact with devotional service, to come in contact with a devotee. You don't know how potent that effect is. Sometimes we take it for granted how devotees go here and there, interacting with people to distribute Krishna consciousness. We're devotees, we're trying to do a good thing. We know the people aren't interested. We know they're not going to accept. But still, some of us anyway, we try to preach to them. We try to interact with them. Just by your efforts to interact with people, you've rearranged their whole karma. This is the essential point of preaching Krishna consciousness. Their life will never be the same because they met you. There should be no doubt about this point. Once we understand these things deeply, we become so grateful. We were speaking last time about how gratitude is very essential in devotional life. Here you see how Earth is complaining that to Prithu, don't kill me, try to understand my situation. She had already made a whole presentation to Prithu in the previous chapter, but Prithu didn't accept it. He was still very angry. So then the earth said to him, look, let me explain at the deepest level what's going on. I have persons living on me who are not performing yajna. They're not behaving as they should. They're not following the standard means for happiness, and the governments aren't doing anything about it. Therefore, I am withholding my grains. So then she gave instruction to Prithu. You treat me in a different way. Have the people treat me in a different way. Have them treat me in a way that I can feel affection. And then I'll reveal my hidden food grades. Present a calf to me, and then I'll feel affection, and the harvest will result. So the rest of the chapter is about how different persons, like the demigods, even the demons, they made various calves, and in this way were able to extract from the affectionate earth what they needed. So the point we can meditate on is that the earth is wanting to be treated affectionately. Gratitude is a big part of affection. In fact, if you don't have gratitude, how can you be affectionate towards someone? In our daily life, in Krishna's temple, we should make gratitude a daily practice. And you'll see your whole spiritual life can change. Just think, if you come before the deities every day and just thank them, thank you for letting me be here. I wonder how many of you do that. I won't ask you to raise your hand. Thank you for letting me have the association of devotees. And when you offer flowers to Prabhupada, when you sing Prabhupada's Guru Puja, how many of you are feeling, thank you for letting me have this process of devotional service? When you see devotees who are so wonderfully engaged in devotional service, you feel gratitude in your heart. Thank you for you're doing what you're doing. Thank you so much. And, of course, you not only can feel it in your heart, you can also say something. I really appreciate, you know, the efforts you're going through. I really appreciate your service dedication. The more gratitude that we show to Krishna, the more gratitude we show to the devotees, the more you'll start to feel affection. But if you just take everything for granted, another day here, and who's going to tell me what service to do, and who's going to try to give me some advice, who thinks they know better than me, and how many don't understand me because everything I'm going through is so unique and has never been experienced before. When you start feeling like that, then the heart becomes hard. And you start taking everything for granted, and soon you're making offenses. Your whole vision changes. You lose your touch for the holy name, so to speak. You lose your touch for devotional service. You lose your ability to associate with devotees. You see how they're doing so many wrong things, and they're inconsiderate, and even the karmis treat you better than the devotees, and on and on and on it goes. This means you've lost the plot because of lack of gratitude. Everything can be nipped in the bud just by being grateful. Gratefulness comes from appreciation. I don't deserve to be here. I appreciate so much the opportunity I have. Yes, sometimes there are inconveniences. Sometimes there are misunderstandings. We never deny that. But my main emotion that I'm feeling is gratitude. I don't deserve to be here. During the kirtan, we're thinking, I can't believe it. I am chanting the holy name of Krishna. I am dancing in ecstasy, just like Lord Chaitanya taught. How did this happen? The more that our hearts become overwhelmed by gratitude for Krishna and for the devotees, then the heart becomes soft and more advanced spiritual emotions can have a chance one day to arise. But if our hearts are hard and, well, I guess I gotta be here because I don't want to suffer in the material world, like they say. I don't want bad karma. I don't want to lose my human form of life and become an animal in my next birth, so I guess I gotta be here. And I guess I gotta chant. And I guess I gotta do devotional service. And if you don't do it, then, you know, everyone gets on your case. Your guru, he may get on your case. The temple management doesn't, they think you're in Maya. Maybe there's another way. Maybe in a few years I'll look for another way, I'm sure there are devotees who think otherwise, that you don't have to take things so seriously. Just believe in Krishna and la-di-da. When you have that attitude, you're missing out. This is bhakti science. If you want to experience Krishna beyond religious belief, you have to have the right attitude. Your attitude influences what you can see, what you can perceive. This is very important. Western knowledge is built on the false understanding that your attitude has practically nothing to do with what you can understand and what you can perceive. In other words, your behavior can be any kind of perverted, distorted thing, but when you walk into a laboratory, it's you and the facts. You're going to see it all objectively. But that's not what Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, how the modes of material nature color your vision according to the particular influence of the modes of nature you're under. You'll see accordingly. So there's no objectivity. It's not that you can indulge in rajogun and tamogun and then think you see objectively, you understand the universe. It doesn't work like that. Now, are we just saying this based on belief? No. We have a whole lifestyle for how to experience these things and enter deeply into them. Prabhupada didn't come at such an advanced age to just give us a religious belief. He came to give us a process by which pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam, you can directly perceive with the purified senses. So we're willing to spend time for development of those purified senses so we can actually perceive the spiritual reality. We're willing to put in time to do that. This is what characterizes a devotee. The patience and determination that I'll put in some time in order to get to this level. That's nothing unusual in this world. People put in so much time to become qualified as doctors, become qualified as lawyers. Even you want to be a heating and refrigeration specialist, you got to put in some time. You just don't walk up to someone's house and say, "Hi, I'd like to fix your refrigerator." They want to know, what's your qualification? "Hi, I'd like to adjust the heating system in your business." No, you've got to be licensed. Now, why is it when it comes to bhakti, we think, well, I'll put in a few months, maybe a couple of years, and hey, if I don't see Krishna, I guess this is not the place for me. We have to be serious about our career to be Krishna conscious. And once you start cultivating gratitude, you'll find it so much easier to be here and to be serious about Krishna consciousness. It's a much easier way than, just twisting your own arm and saying, okay, I've got to be here, otherwise I'm going to suffer. That's true, but there's an easier way to go about it. It just takes a little knowledge to have gratitude. I don't deserve this. No matter what happens, no matter what inconveniences, I don't deserve to be here. Who am I to be associating with these devotees? Who am I to come before Srila Prabhupada, to see Rukmini Dwarkadesh every morning? The more you cultivate that attitude, the more Krishna will reciprocate with you, and he'll reveal the wonders of bhakti, just like the earth is going to reveal all the hidden food grains, because the earth is being dealt with affectionately, with gratitude. Now, there are some very important points in this chapter that we should meditate upon. Don't just read these things and just pass over them. And first of all, Prabhupada makes the point, standard ways for happiness. It's not that you have to rack your mind this way and that way how to be happy. Our presentation to the world is that there are standard ways for happiness which are far superior to anything that people can struggle to manufacture. Indeed, in your struggles to manufacture methods for happiness, you're causing yourself simply pain, useless hard labor and misery. Why this manufacture ways to be happy? I got to figure out how to be happy. You got to figure out how to be happy. No. The point of this chapter is that there are standard ways of happiness. They are given by liberated sages. But what is the tendency today? Not tendency, what is the gospel today? Liberated sages, who cares for them? Your opinion is as good as mine. How do you think you should be happy? What makes you happy? Oh, that might make me happy too. Let's all think how we can be happy. Let's come up with something new. In this way, people waste so much time and they actually destroy themselves simply in this attempt to manufacture ways for happiness. I know it seems very innocent to ordinary vision. What's wrong with trying to figure out how to be happy? What's wrong with trying to create your own ways to be happy? Why are you guys criticizing that? But this chapter is giving us deeper knowledge. You're wasting your time. You're spoiling your valuable human form of life by trying to come up with ways to be happy. There is a standard way to be both materially and spiritually happy. Why don't you think about that and focus on that? The words of the liberated souls cannot be compared to the words of fools. But you reject the words of liberated souls, you'll be forced to listen to fools. Just like these most illustrious Nobel Prize winning scientists. They're angry. You guys aren't listening to us. You don't understand how much laboratory research we've done. You don't understand all the breakthroughs we've done. You're not listening to us. You're accepting revealed knowledge as superior. So, they complain that, you see, by your accepting God, that stops all scientific research. A genuine scientist always thinks, if I can't understand something, I just need to spend more time in research in the laboratory, and there'll be a breakthrough one day. But if you think there's a God, this is what they say, if you think there's a God, as soon as you reach something you can't understand, you just invoke God, and all research stops. Therefore, we have to get rid of religion. This is their very twisted and warped mentality. That as soon as you find out something you can't explain, you invoke God. Therefore, we cannot teach intelligent design in schools. It's not science, because as soon as you accept an intelligent designer, then all scientific research stops. Whenever you come across something that's beyond your senses, you'll say, God did it. So how can there be any science then? Science means, according to them, you have to push aside any God notion and just rely on your senses, rely on your intelligence. Such a lack of humility. Our senses, our tiny brains are going to figure out everything. Now, how do they bewilder people? They always deal with intermediate, immediate, very immediate things. We have figured this out. We have figured that out. The previous scientists of 100 years ago said, there must be a designer, there must be a God. And as soon as he said like that, his research stopped. And then someone else after him was cynical, rejected the God theory, and came up with a scientific breakthrough to explain such and such a thing. But they never present to you knowledge of the ultimate cause. They never talk about that. Always look at this immediate success we've had. We didn't say God, we just found out some immediate or intermediate. They won't admit it's intermediate. We just found out a new scientific fact. But they'll never push forward to the ultimate cause of all causes. And that's what we deal with. All right, we give them credit. I remember Prabhupada saying once, okay, make a tape recorder, make some batteries, we give you all credit. But don't talk about what's the cause of the cosmos. We'll give you credit for your tape recorders. We'll give you credit for your batteries. Fine, go do it. But don't think you've solved the problems of life. Don't think you've understood the cause of the universe. So what they do to people is they just hypnotize you. Look at these lasers, MP3 players, hidden secrets of the universe. We're doing it all. They never mention you. They have no idea what is the ultimate cause. Or as Prabhupada would continuously make the point, how can life come from matter? They don't deal with that. Maybe some of it's our fault we're not making enough noise, but they don't deal with that. Even so, they're admitting the people are losing faith in evolution and the universe arising out of the Big Bang. They're losing faith. It's just not happening. Some of us may remember Prabhupada's statement in the 70s. He said, in 50 years, Darwin will be forgotten. Sounded incredible. But here you see now, the scientists are admitting, the people just don't seem to be accepting this. What's going on? We've got to preach. We've got to come forward and with an evangelical spirit. So, we're not ashamed to take our stand on the standard ways of happiness, and that we take our lifestyle counseling from liberated souls. That's how we decide how to live. We don't give credit for manufacturing ways of happiness. We don't take it in that way. If you look at human history, you'll see that maybe 1,000, 2,000 years ago, people considered the way to be happy was to be virtuous, to do good things, to be good. It's not like that anymore. The version of mundane happiness has changed from happiness equals virtue, or happiness equals doing good and being good, to what? Happiness equals just feeling good. You just feel good. However it happens, you feel good, and then you're happy. This is not an age-old thing in recent human history. This is a recent development in which all conception of virtue is gone. All conception of doing good or behaving good is gone. Just feel good, and that's happiness. Once again, the manufacturing process is going on. We have to figure out how to be happy. And Bhagavatam is telling you, it's already been figured out. Don't waste your time manufacturing. Here is the way how to be both materially and spiritually happy. So we're dealing with very monumental themes in Srimad Bhagavatam, which strike at the deepest core of our life and at the core of society. So these things require a lot of thought. And in the association of devotees, we can remain focused on these essential issues which are meant for our individual improvement and the improvement of society. It takes some effort to remain focused on these things. On your own, it'll be very difficult these days. The propaganda is so intense, just like we're describing these so-called scientific propaganda. Outside the association of devotees, you can be so easily swept away by these things. Inside the association of devotees, if you cling, if you just get this point right, no matter what, I'm going to cling to the association of devotees, you'll be saved so much trouble. Storms may come, still, I'll hold tight to the Sangha. You'll be able to maintain your vision of clarity. And to stay in the association of devotees, you have to be grateful. Always thank Krishna every day. Even sometimes you're feeling this way and that way. There's been some austerity, some inconvenience, some misunderstanding. Still, thank Krishna. The opportunity I have, I don't deserve. Let me never take this for granted. And then you'll see a big transformation in your spiritual life. I will stop here and see if any quick questions. Archita Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for a very nice presentation. You stole my story. I read that article, and I watched videos to put faces to the names of those rascal, so-called scientists. Where's the outcry, the public outcry from our camp? At least in the Christian camp, they have some websites where they're, you know, they posted notes about the whole, you know, conference that these people had, and they actually posted the videos. I watched some of the videos there on one Christian site, Christian scientific site. But where's the outcry from our camp? You've presented very nicely counter-arguments to what they're saying, but we're not putting that out in the public. We should have immediate response. I mean, we should, whether it gets published or not, but we should immediately respond to the major news organizations and, you know, media, major media, get our side out there. It doesn't seem that we're doing that.
As I said last time, I think you were traveling when I was here last, it is a little painful to see that Prabhupada was ahead of his time. What he wanted us to do in the 70s, these others with such insufficient knowledge are trying to do now. Whereas Prabhupada, he was so far ahead. If we had continued on in that way, we'd have been so, our preaching machine about these things would have been so powerful. But you're right, I also feel the same thing. They're forming their, other religious groups are forming their institutes for preaching purposes. One's called the Discovery Institute. I wonder where they got the idea that to do these kind of things from. So, yes, I agree. You can just imagine. You don't have to imagine. You can just see Srila Prabhupada's reaction to hearing about such things as the great meeting a few days ago in California. He'd be shaking the walls of this room with his oratory, his class presentations. So, yes, we have a lot to do. Anyone else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to God.
What's the status?